Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, March 11th. Corned beef will be on sale this weekend, so you better get to the store before Wednesday. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about mental health. Specifically, we're going to talk about President Biden's plan to expand access to mental health services across the country, especially for children and young adults, and a new report from CB Insights on venture capital funding of new mental health apps and technologies. To explain what this mix of public and private initiatives means for patients are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Spring is around the corner, even though there's still snow on the ground. I'm excited to move into daylight savings time this weekend, so I've got a little extra spring in my step this morning.
Good. Good to hear. Julie, how about you?
Yeah, you know, it's been sunny in Seattle this week, so it's really been quite amazing. But we've been having a lot of conversations around our house this week about leadership. Whether certain different types of leaders around the world would be doing the same thing as Putin. And these conversations are happening with teenagers, so they've been really entertaining, but also just scary. So it's been a deep week here.
Well, it's good you guys are talking about it. I think that's great. Thank you. Now, before we talk about Biden's plan and the CB Insights report, I wanted to ask you about what you've witnessed in your schools or in your communities about the need for more mental health services. Dave, I know Chicago's a big place with lots of problems, but how has the lack of mental health services manifested itself in your neighborhood, you know, especially during the pandemic? What have you seen firsthand?
Well, it's impossible to live in a dense urban neighborhood like we do and not see evidence of serious mental health disease, particularly among homeless populations. And their numbers do seem to be up a bit, at least in our neighborhood. But honestly, Dave, I'm worrying more about the increased numbers of those suffering from mental health conditions that we don't see, particularly parents and children. Inadequate mental health service provision has been an enormous public health problem for a while, and COVID has only made it worse.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, what about you? How has the lack of adequate mental health services revealed itself in the circles you run in?
Well, in the schools in which my kids are in, I've seen suicide attempts related to just stress and anxiety of everything that's been going on, and an eating disorder situation that was really came down to needing to control something in her life. And I don't know whether that would have happened anyway, but you wonder whether that control really was about what's been happening. And what's interesting for me is I'm finding that a lot of my peer moms don't know a ton about the virtual mental health services available to them. So I find myself educating a lot, and everyone's still grasping for that, you know, therapist in their local region. So it just makes me feel like we have just scratch the surface of what's available virtually.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And speaking of schools, in our neighborhood, just last Friday, we had a student at our local high school commit suicide. Ugh. And the school sent out an email Saturday morning offering grief counseling and mental health services for students. I mean, what a tragedy. You know, we really do need to do more for our kids, that's for sure. That's a big part of Biden's new national mental health strategy. The plan calls for a number of things, including expanding the mental health and substance abuse workforce, investing in behavioral health education and training, increasing the number of ancillary professionals like community health workers and social workers, promoting the mental health of existing frontline healthcare workers like doctors and nurses, expanding community mental health services, supporting research into new mental health practice models, integrating mental health and substance abuse treatment into primary care, expanding virtual and telehealth mental health services, and expanding access to mental health services in schools, colleges, and universities. The list goes on. Dave, what do you think of Biden's plan, and what part of his plan has the biggest chance of success?
Well, kudos to the Biden administration. The plan he outlined in the State of the Union address is the most expansive and comprehensive approach to mental health services since the Carter administration in the 70s. It recognizes many of the yawning gaps in mental health service provision. And we're still, as a nation, a very long way away from the goal of the Mental Health Parity Act of 2008, which was clearly that mental health services are important as physical care services, and the fact that we treat them disproportionately is disgraceful. And it manifests itself in the statistics. 40% of adults report symptoms of anxiety and depression, even higher in Black, Brown, and rural communities. More than half of parents express concerns over their children's mental well-being. Post-COVID, student performance in reading and math are lagging by 4 and 5 months, respectively. You know, Julie, as you were observing in your neighborhood, 1 in 3 high school students and half of female students report persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. Teenage suicide attempts have increased dramatically. There's clearly a lot to tackle. 3 areas of Biden's program that I particularly liked, and they cut across a lot of the initiatives. First is the focus on beefing up community-based mental health care resources. I really like the idea of having certified behavioral health clinics. They're a nice complement to the federally qualified health centers that have been so successful, particularly in low-income neighborhoods. They've got increased funding for the training and hiring of mental health service professionals, which are in desperately short supply. And then, as you mentioned, Dave, the broader training for social and human service professionals, such as educators and housing counselors and so on. Secondly, making telehealth services more available by eliminating state licensing barriers and jawboning for more expansive telemedicine services for federal employees. Even though I know telemedicine services have come down a bit lately, and there's some thought that they're really only 1% of the addressable market, they are particularly adept at addressing mental health conditions like anxiety and depression, where it's often hard even to get someone into an office visit. So really making those telehealth services much more ubiquitous is really impressive. And finally, the third item is the emphasis on schools and colleges. Attempting suicide is often an impulsive act, and having the ability to identify students at risk and intervene effectively at moments of crisis are essential components of successful programs. UCLA has been a real leader in this area with its Depression Grand Challenge. And then final point, Biden's program requires congressional support for long-term funding and sustainability. You can propose all kinds of great initiatives, but if Congress doesn't put them into legislation, we really don't get anywhere. For example, Biden wants to require health plans to offer 3 mental health visits each year without copays. That just seems like an obvious thing we should be funding as part of health plans. It actually almost seems like too little. My sister-in-law is an anxiety counselor, and she got so frustrated with dealing with insurance companies that she now only treats self-pay patients, and her practice is swamped, as we're seeing across the country. So this is a bipartisan issue. Mental health services affect everybody. And there is some evidence of bipartisan support. Let's hope it manifests itself through passage legislation that funds much of this Biden agenda.
Yeah, hear, hear. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any comments or questions for Dave?
So, Dave, I am completely with you on my excitement for the fact that Biden's focused on this and actually, and I think, really thoughtful ways. One way that I was shocked by was the $5 million investment into research about models that are treating mental health conditions. And we all know the need for this kind of research and evidence and mental health care, but $5 million almost seems like an insult to the issue. What, in your opinion, really needs to be funded to move the ball forward for mental health to become part of the context of the greater healthcare we talk about?
Yeah, $5 million does seem like trying to find nickels in front of a bulldozer to fund programming. My understanding on the $5 million is that it specifically targets research on the harm caused by social media platforms and then finding interventions to address those harms. That's clearly an area that requires much, much more research. At least $5 million gets the ball rolling there. The other area that I target, Julian, in response to your question, is I'd just like to see more research on the impact of increasing stress levels on people of all ages. You know, our collective stress menu was already full but we've added inflation worries and fallout from Russia's attack on Ukraine to our list of concerns over which we have very little control. My guess is that over the next couple of decades, we'll see more evidence of increasing stress, and we just have to figure out ways to help people manage it better. So a lot of research needs to go into that.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about this new report from CB Insights on venture capital funding of mental health apps and technologies. The report said global mental health funding rose 139% to $5.5 billion last year from $2.3 billion in 2020. 4.5 of that 5.5 last year happened in the U.S., but the number of startups that left the digital mental health market also rose by 87% to 43 last year from 23 in 2020. Julie, what's your take on the report? Does it mirror what you're seeing in the market? And what does it say about the market this year?
So, you know, one stat I found just so striking is that the National Council for Mental Health Wellbeing says that 3 out of 4 U.S. counties have a severe shortage of mental health providers. So all these startups are really trying to focus on the access issue at the moment. And we see in a lot of the companies we look at that the startups themselves are having a hard time getting access to the providers they need. I mean, we just have a massive, massive access issue, as we've talked about in the past. So the report absolutely supports what I'm seeing, but I'll say I personally see more startups starting and growing than exiting at the moment. But there's no doubt that the M&A is and, you know, will happen at a much greater rate over the next 12 to 24 months. What I get excited about, as you've heard me talk about in other health categories, is the fact that startups are increasingly focusing on specific populations. So for instance, Brightline is a company that is being very closely watched because they're one of the leaders in taking on teen mental health and kind of adolescent, teen, kind of other behavioral issues, other diagnoses that are really challenging for, you know, families to handle. There's Brave Health that is focused on behavioral health in the Medicaid population. I mean, talk about taking on challenging issues. And they're positioned in a really interesting way. So I'm very excited for them. There's Hazel, which is a great model focused on children pursuing access through schools, which, let's face it, I mean, there's no more logical access point than schools, but hard industry to also sell into, right? So these are definitely next generation, though not any more important than the big guys out there, frankly, like Headspace and ThriveWorks that we work with. Both have their place. And if anything, the more established players are really giving EAPs a run for their money these days. The EAPs are in a position to, frankly, innovate or get thrown out on many of these mental health issues, which I think is pretty exciting. And many think they'll never go away, but you're seeing large employers like General Mills choosing Spring Health over their EAP. So it's interesting times out there.
Interesting. Segmentation and personalization. That's great. Dave, any comments or questions for Julie?
The CB Insights report, Julie, identified 10 mental health unicorns, and they include some of your favorites, including Spring Health, Lyra Health, and Ginger. And you just mentioned employee assistance programs. These three companies, among others, are attacking this target-rich market. How effective are their service platforms, do you think, at addressing employees' mental health challenges? And how much of a disruptive threat are they to the traditional EAP providers who often just offered a 1-800 number to call?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think getting back to my example of General Mills, I think some of the large employers with a pretty wide variation in type of employee are just feeling like the EAP is doing nothing. So they want a more aggressive model and they're experimenting with a lot of different models. I think some of the concerns about newer models is that a lot of them are virtual only, or they're more virtual and their in-person services are limited. So, you know, if you have an on-site crisis issue, you know, suicide prevention, no one's necessarily rolling in from some of these larger virtual players to help with that issue on-site. So I think some of the employers feel like there's not necessarily sufficient services, but a lot of the EAPs don't necessarily have that either. The piece that I think is most important, which gets back to actually my question to you about Biden, is peer-reviewed research. It's really limited in this area. we're so new into really understanding what's happening with mental health right now. And a lot of the studies that have been done, you know, some have been done in-house by the companies themselves. Some have very limited focus on kind of true ROI and clinical evidence. So there are a lot of issues. And what I see happening, which I think happens a lot, Dave, in other industries, is the EAPs are waking up and realizing that there's a lot of new functionality, a lot of new access capabilities, a lot of new positive customer service experiences that the EAP isn't providing, and they've been resting on their laurels and just checking the box. So you're going to see, I think, the EAPs probably just get a lot better at what they're doing through acquisition. Some might try to build it themselves, I can't imagine. And I think the EAPs will be probably here to stay, but this might be a pathway for how this industry rolls up.
One thing that I've seen in a couple of small companies that I like a lot are these new abilities to kind of zero in on what's really troubling people and discover who's at risk and intervene. So there's a company called Affected Determinants of Health that's got an emoji. So instead of filling out numbers, you actually see a line of faces like you do with the pain medication. So it's much more precise at getting exactly how a person's feeling. And then there's another company called CADMD, Computer Adaptive Testing, that's got all these statistically linked questions. So if you answer a question one way, then another question comes up. And that's what UCLA is using to track the mental health of their students. And I just think one of the things that can happen is that these digital tech companies will develop much more effective screening mechanisms so we aren't so scattershot in how we respond to this.
Yeah. And Dave, if I can just comment back, Ginger's gone down that road with some of their health plan relationships of being the triage mechanism for members so that health plans can get their members into the most effective level of treatment they need. So I think triage is an incredible way that a lot of these upstarts can be used.
Thanks, Julie. You know, I think a lot about what my parents worried about with me and my sister growing up, and it was almost exclusively physical health, you know, getting sick or, God forbid, getting into a car accident. You know, I don't think we ever talked about mental health. So I'm really glad we're turning that corner as a society, and we really need these public and private sector initiatives to keep pace. So thanks, Dave, and thank you, Julie. Great stuff as always. Now let's talk about other big news this past week. Julie, what other healthcare news topped your list?
Well, breaking news, but someone who I consider to be the godfather of digital health is Aaron Martin at Providence. And rumor on the street is that Aaron is going back to his alma mater, Amazon, to take a pretty senior role in Amazon Health.
Wow, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
We break news on the roundup. Thank you.
Very excited for him.
Yeah, that's great. Dave, what other big healthcare stories should we know about?
Well, first, good for Aaron. He's the one who talked me into publishing my first book through Amazon. So I hope he just knocks him dead at Amazon Care if he's going back there. Anyway, in terms of news, I was pleased to see this week that Civica Rx, the nonprofit drug manufacturing company, is going to produce insulin. That's a logical market response to the price gouging that's been going on by current suppliers. More power to them. I hope Mark Cuban's new company gets in on the act as well.
Competition. I love it. Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.